I'm glad we could all be here together today to hear lessons on being worthy women. We have just heard some of the things that every young girl and woman can do, some of the things even that wives can do, and I'm going to speak to you this morning about some of the unique opportunities that wives and mothers have in order to meet this goal. My lesson might go 2-3 minutes over as well, but I figured it out, and we have about 10 extra minutes in the program, so with Jill's 5 and my 2 or 3, it'll leave Sharon 2 or 3 just in case. So it should work out. As wives, we are to care for our husbands, and if God blesses us, our families. This is an awesome responsibility that, if done well, has even greater rewards. In order to be a successful wife and mother, there are a few steps that we all must follow. The first thing that we must do, regardless of age or gender, really, is to serve God. We must serve Him to the best of our ability, which requires us to be honest with ourselves as to what our abilities really are, whether it's trying to find new tasks in order to help the church, or recognizing that maybe we have taken too much on and asking for help. Sometimes we have abilities that we don't use. We have opportunities to serve, but we don't take them. Sometimes we serve, but we could do more. And sometimes we try to do more than we are really able to do and need to ask for help. Hebrews 12:28 says, "Therefore, since we receive a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us show gratitude by which we may offer to God an acceptable service with reverence and awe." Serving God and deciding in your heart that you are going to follow His will is the most important step. Service to God must be the foundation of our lives. If someone tries to skip or omit this step, there's no way that they can be successful at any of the others. After service to God, the next step is to love your husband. The best way to love your husband is to put him before yourself. As Christians, both men and women are commanded by God to put others before themselves. I believe this to be so essential because the root of all sin is selfishness. Selfishness leads to sin when people do not care about the well-being of others and have no empathy for the negative consequences that others will face based on their actions. Matthew 5:40-42 says, "If anyone wants to see you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away." Verses 43-48 tells Christians to go even farther by saying, "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy.' But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? For do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore, you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect." If we are to love our enemies, even our enemies, how much more should we love our husbands? Once a wife has placed her husband's needs before her own, she can't help but to make him happy. This is something that requires sacrifice, whether it is of time, energy, or doing something for him instead of pursuing whatever you might want to do at that moment. One should not marry unless they are ready to do this. A wife that consistently places her husband before herself will be treated with respect, gratitude, and love. I believe that this is what Proverbs 31:11 and 12 means when it says, "The heart of her husband safely trusts in her, so that he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life." A husband who knows that his wife acts in his best interest first will not need to know everything that she's doing, because he knows that it is always something good. He is able to spend his time trying to please her and provide for her. How would it be possible for two people to be unhappy when they know that the person that they love the most is continually working to make them happy? Another responsibility wives have is to the house and family. God has given women a place of honor, being the heart of the family. Wives and mothers set the mood and tone for the whole house. To illustrate my point, there is a saying that basically states that if mother isn't happy, then no one is happy. This saying shows that she is such an integral part of the household that she has the ability to influence not just the actions, but even the moods of the people around her. So conversely, it stands to reason that if mother is happy, then everyone else will be as well, or at least she'll be able to cheer up whoever isn't. Another point to keep in mind is that a mother also has the ability to bring everyone down. So it is a mother's responsibility to take time out for herself, to keep sane, to avoid becoming someone who is angry all the time, someone who is unapproachable. God has given wives the task of running the household. Whether or not a wife has children, it is her responsibility to make sure that the house runs smoothly. And the first step to that is for her to submit herself to her husband, which is found in Ephesians 5:22-33. Verses 22-24 and 33 states, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let wives be to their own husbands in everything. Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband." Wives submitting to their husbands is something that is neither easy nor fashionable in our society. We are constantly bombarded by images from the media of blundering husbands and mean, sarcastic wives who often treat their husbands like children. This type of relationship was never God's plan, and it does not work. A wife that treats her husband like one of her children will quickly earn resentment and lose love and respect. However, the media would have you believe otherwise. They would like you to think that it does not matter how you act or how you treat your husband. As long as you have that magic metal band on your finger, he will or should always love you. They would like you to believe that accepting the authority of a husband will make you less of a person. The reality of a wife submitting to her husband is that unless she married a power-hungry man, which she should know and have taken the time to find out before she marries, it is most likely that he will view his authority only as a huge responsibility and not really enjoy being the boss. A side note that I have is I had my husband read my lesson, and his comment was, he will view this authority as a tremendous responsibility and not a no-strings perk to simply enjoy. That may be what Hollywood tells you men are like, but Christian men are not like that. The reality is that if everyone does the job that God has given them, the only result will be that wives will be treated with as much love as their husbands can show, and that husbands will be treated with the respect they deserve. In order for anything to be accomplished, there must be an established order structure. And God has chosen husbands to be in charge, not because men are better or that he loves them more, but because it was his decision to make. And not respecting a husband's authority is to disregard God's authority to put them there. Once this order structure is in place and everyone knows who is in charge, decisions can be made much more quickly and life can be lived happily instead of spent in a constant battle of wills. A recent responsibility, and one that I'm learning about more and more every day, is loving and caring for children. This is probably one of the hardest jobs that there is, especially caring for new babies. But it is also one of the most rewarding experiences there is. The best start to loving children is serving God and loving your husband, which will provide them with a safe and happy home. Next, mothers must care for the physical needs of their children, as verse 21 of Proverbs 31 states, "She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household is clothed with scarlet." The woman in this chapter has made preparations so that she does not even have to worry about her children, because she knows she has already taken care of them. However, meeting a child's physical needs is not something many mothers have a difficult time with, unless they have a substance abuse problem or mental illness. Almost every mother is interested in or concerned with meeting their child's physical needs. I know for myself, I am frequently cold. So when Gwendolyn was born, I was constantly worried that she was going to be cold. Her first week, I layered her with onesies and nightgowns and socks and blankets. She was born in the middle of July. A onesie was all that she needed, and sometimes not even that. She was so sweet, though, and never complained about it once. Unfortunately, she did have to let me know somehow, and she broke out in little patches of heat rash. But this is my point entirely. Most mothers take great interest in caring for their children's physical needs, even if they aren't always good at it, at first, maybe. I hope I'm better now. Much more frequent a problem is not meeting a child's spiritual needs. It is so important to teach and train children to love and serve God. Even now, I worry about the kind of person that Gwendolyn will become, and I often pray that she will grow to love God and that I won't fail her in teaching her to do so. I don't know what the best way is to teach a child to love God, but I suspect that it is in teaching them discipline, to be able to control themselves. 1 Corinthians 14:33 says, "For God is not the author of confusion, but of peace." Peace, which Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines as a state of security or order within a community provided for by custom or law. Law or custom. So many times I see parents allow their children to develop bad habits, not just out in the world, but also in the church. Whether it's letting a child scream in the store or putting them on the floor to play during worship. While I can't say either of these is wrong, although the screaming bit can definitely be annoying, both are things that parents will have to unteach their children later on. It seems to me to just be easier to not let them learn certain things in the first place. Every day, we teach our children something. If we are not teaching our children to do something, we are actually teaching them to not do it. If we do not teach our children to read the Bible, then we are teaching them that their time is better spent doing other things. If we do not take our children to worship services consistently, or we miss other events such as gospel meetings, or we habitually arrive late, they can't help but learn that church is not important, or that church is not important to you. Children will learn from their parents' example, and being a good example is a hefty responsibility. There is a saying that goes, "Do as I say and not as I do," and is entirely evil. Parents deceive themselves if they think that for one second anyone, especially children, who are often fairness watchdogs, will actually do this. There is no time that is more important in a child's development than those first few years, and sadly, because of the difficulty in raising children, it often seems like parents decide to wait to teach their children about God until things get easier, or until they have a good routine down with them. As far as I know, children do not get easier with age. They always have new tricks. As soon as I think I've got Gwendolyn figured out, she always has something new. It is important to remember what children are learning in these first few years. Things like grasping, walking, talking, reading, writing. These are things that they will use every day for the rest of their lives. We must ask ourselves, what other lifelong habits are they learning? Or character traits or abilities? But more importantly, what can we be teaching them or helping them to develop? I believe that in order to teach a child to learn good habits, you must expose it to them before they're ready. Expose them to it before they're ready. Show them what will be expected of them before it actually is. So if they aren't able to do it, there's no harm done. No one would expect a child to wake up one morning knowing how to write their name or ride a bike when they didn't know it the night before. Just like those things, service to God is something that requires practice. Being the worthy woman of Proverbs is something that every woman, and especially every Christian woman, should strive for. Unfortunately, a woman like this is fairly rare because not everyone does. Otherwise, Proverbs would not say that a worthy woman is more precious than rubies. However, every woman is capable of being a worthy woman. Probably the biggest and most frequent obstacle to this goal is a lack of correct prioritization. I know that for myself, keeping my priorities in order and sometimes even remembering what they are is a task that requires constant vigilance. It means that every day, really every day, I have to think about the things that I can do that are the most important to being, to me, to being the kind of person I want to be. And it is not easy. Some days I feel like I don't succeed in meeting any of my goals. These are the days that I have to refocus my efforts so that I can succeed the next day. I do not believe that I will ever be finished, but I will always strive to better myself. I have found that the best way to change and become more like the person I would like to be, which is a worthy woman, is to act like the person I want to be. That doesn't mean I actually think that I am that person, lest I get lazy or complacent, but it means I act in ways that are not my usual custom, and slowly I will make real changes in my life for the better. The hardest part of making change is breaking old and bad habits. Once you can recognize the areas of your life that you need to change, you have the ability to reorganize your priorities, to put God first, which will put you on your way to caring for your family to the best of your ability. God has given us a system so that we can live a happy life in service to Him. We are to set a good example so that others might desire to come to Him. Titus 2:3-5 says, "The older women likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed." This is one of the greatest charges that we are given as Christians. We are to live our life in such a way so that no one, not coworkers, not neighbors, non-believing spouses, or our children will never want or just not feel the need to become faithful servants to God based on our actions. Thank you.